Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
And welcome to Ladies Who London podcast. I'm Emily Dell.
And I'm Alex Lacey, and we're qualified London Blue Badge tourist guides.
Each week we bring to you some of the best bits of London.
We talk about our favourite people, places and events with a bit of information, a lot of laughs and a whole lot of fun.
We can be found on Instagram at Ladies Who London podcast and on our websites guideemily.com
and alexlacey.com for information about our upcoming walking tours and virtual tours, as well as what the Blue Badge guiding qualification is all about.
Hello, Alex Lacey.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, very well.
How are things going in mamahood?
Mamahood going okay. Yeah, it's a bit crazy. Haven't had that much sleep. But we've taken her out a few times and she's not been too bad.
Yay.
Yeah, it's a lot to get used to, but I just can't stop looking at her.
She's lovely. She's very, very sweet.
How have you been?
Very well, very well. I'm currently up on a little mini break with a friend. I've gone to Suffolk. It's so lovely. We've just gone to see where Constable's The Hay Wain was painted.
Oh,
and which, I mean, it's guide nerd heaven up here.
Mm.
And today we're going to Sutton Hoo. Which I'm super excited about, because that's something that we talk about all the time. And
yeah, well, we did
podcast.
We did a podcast, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Seeing The Dig.
Absolutely. So we're going to go and see all of that. So I'll report back and we'll pop some stuff on the Ladies Who London Facebook, Instagram group, Instagram
Fantastic.
Page. What is it?
Ladies Who London, I think.
Yeah. So, it was really nice. Not that I don't love London, but it's just after almost a year in London without leaving, it's quite nice to get away for a little bit.
So nice to get away. And it's just really interesting for me to see you on Zoom in a different setting. Your kitchen is not behind you. I can see a brick wall that I do not recognise.
It's not. It's a really lovely little rental property that one of our fellow guides, shout out to Karen Eastland. Hi, Karen. She rents it out. And so she, we rented it from her for a couple of days. And
fantastic.
Yeah, it's so lovely. It's really nice.
Mm, beautiful.
There we go. Yeah, but all's well otherwise with you?
Yes. Well, I haven't really left the house much. I mean, as I say, when we've gone out for like an hour and a half and we've gone to like a place for brunch and we had a little walk around, because it's been so beautiful, isn't it? Lovely and warm. But yeah, that's about it really. Just kind of getting into the swing of things and trying to create a routine, which I know is going to be turned upside down in about 24 hours, but yeah, all good.
Aww. Well, listen, while your little one sleeps, let's do the podcast.
Let's go for it.
So, welcome everybody to this week's Ladies Who London. We're thrilled to be back, and we need to look at the podcast pedestal from last week, which was I really enjoyed Samuel Johnson. I didn't know so much about him, and I'm still really fascinated by the fact that he had Tourette's. I just think that that's such an interesting detail that I'm quite astounded that I didn't know.
Yeah, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. So, podcast pedestal was an odd one. We weren't quite sure what to go for, were we? Because there were so many different things.
Yeah, and I've been kind of regretting my choice, to be honest.
Well, so have I.
What, my choice or your choice?
My choice.
Just because I think really was Renjum, I can't even say it, retromengency, was that the crux point of the story? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I was sort of thinking, I do feel like his mum getting him to memorise the Bible and then him doing it in sort of 20 seconds flat was quite a key thing, but it's quite a difficult one to explain. And I was like, oh, the mum's memory test doesn't sound very good. And oh, anyway.
And mine just sounds gross. I mean, urinating backwards. Why is that?
Though. We'd all want to do it.
I don't know. But then having said that...
Wouldn't you want to be retromengent?
maybe I would, yes. Not right now, but maybe in about 10 years. The old party trick or whatever. Yeah. Be like,
what
speciality
kind of parties are you going to?
I used to be a blue badge guide and now I'm a retromengent. I can't even say the word.
Professional retromengent. Available parties.
Yeah, what kind of parties are you going to? That would be the question, wouldn't it? No, just
hilarious.
Wakes and
it's time to liven it up. Go on out, Emily, get out your party.
Oh god.
Oh, hilarious. Well,
but yes, I have looked at my poll and I've done quite well actually.
Yeah, you have? I was surprised. Mm. I honestly thought everyone's just gonna be like, oh, this is rubbish. Both of these are rubbish. But yeah, so it has gone your way actually. It's gone 58% to you.
Oh gosh, 42% to me. Gosh, usually you wait a little while, Alex, and then
I know,
you
I just thought I'm gonna bang straight in.
Oh god, straight in. Wow.
I've got to mix it up a bit, gotta keep you on your toes, you see.
Oh gosh, well, thank you so much, everybody. Yeah. Oh, wow. So what was it? We were neck and neck. So now I'm just one in front again.
You are.
How exciting.
For you.
Yeah.
yeah. Well, there we go. So, onwards to this week's podcast. And let's see what we're going to go for on this week's one.
Excellent. So, Alex, this week it's your turn.
Yes.
Wheel span last week and it landed in Kensington.
Yeah, it did. And I think we said last time that there are so many options in Kensington because it is one of those places you can link almost anybody to one of the institutions there, which is kind of what I've done this week. I've gone for it. So in Kensington, there is the Royal Geographic Society. And I've picked a lady who is not really linked to London that much, except for the fact that she is or was the first female member of the Royal Geographic Society. So I think that's enough of a link.
Yeah, that's a pretty good link.
That's enough of a link.
So that's enough of a link.
And we've had seriously tenuous links before, so I'm going with it.
We have. I mean, we did Soho the other day, and we were actually just out of Soho. So.
And it was the Mayfair, which was the Great Smog, which could have gone anywhere. But yeah,
it could have gone anywhere. But anyway, fine. It's fine, Alex.
Yeah, it was just we're like allowing. So I've picked Isabella Lucy Bird. Do you know anything about her?
I don't know anything about this lady at all. And I thought, you know, should I do a bit of Googling? I was like, no, I'm just going to let Alex tell me.
Okay. So I came across her a couple of years ago and I'm fascinated by her. She's so cool. There are so many Victorian women and we've spoken about quite a few of them. And I've basically got girl crushes on them because they are so fantastic and they've gone out and gone, what am I supposed to be doing? Yeah, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do this instead. And Isabella, well, let's just call it Isabella Bird or Isabella because the whole name's quite long. That's just kind of what she does. So where's she from? What's her deal? She is born in Yorkshire into a religious family in 1839 she's born. Her father's actually a priest in the Church of England. So, you know, not just religious family, properly, you know, in the firm kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they moved quite a bit across the country to different parishes with his job. He had a few controversies around his job as well. He had some practices which people didn't quite enjoy. So he was, I think he kind of left one or two places where people didn't quite agree with him. So they moved around a fair bit. And one of the things about Isabella is that she was considered, and I say considered because, I mean, yeah, she was considered a sickly child, okay? And I think with the Victorians, they do have this sort of slightly gothic air about them and they almost relish these sickly child stories. I mean, there's so many. We get like The Secret Garden as a novel, don't we? We get Tiny Tim and all this kind of mm-hmm. stuff. There's something kind of gothic romantic about this sort of sickly child. And so she is considered this sickly child. She's kind of mollycoddled a bit and wrapped in blankets and quite all that sort of thing. But it does seem that whenever she's doing something that she really loves, she's kind of fine. So whether or not it's, I don't know, a projected illness or this kind of thing, she does have a few ailments, but, you know, she always seems to be a lot better when she's doing what she loves. And
this is what I kind of, I think is so fascinating about her, is that she's just off and doing her own thing. So, she's taught at home. She and her siblings are taught by their parents, and her father's really, really well read, and he teaches her particularly lots of things about flora and fauna, which she finds fascinating, and she will later go on to use this in the books that she will write. And there were stories about her kind of staying back from church when she was particularly sick one day, and they kind of left her at home while they all tootled off, and the minute they were out of the house she was like, right, and she went straight out the door into the garden, which was all like damp from the dew, and they were sort of, you know, oh, don't go out there, you'll catch a death of cold. And she basically had a couple of lovely hours tootling around in the garden and looking at flowers. So nice. You know, it's kind of fun. I like this is probably completely not true, but I sort of imagine her going, yep, far too sick, and they go off, she's like, woohoo, and off she goes.
Probably prancing completely around the garden, exactly, smelling all the dandelions.
I mean, it's probably completely off beam, but you know, I like that image that I've sort of created of her, probably completely false, but anyway. One thing we do know is that she, in her early 20s, in 1850, sorry, she has a tumour removed from her spine, and it's only partly successful, and so she is a little bit kind of weak and sickly after this. And the doctors, now I love, what do doctors, you think about doctors in the Victorian era, what are the kind of things that they always recommend as a good cure for ailments?
Oh God, well, I'd say put a leech on it, but I think that's more kind of 16th century, isn't it?
It is a little bit. One of the things they always say to people if they're suffering from kind of all kinds of maladies, they go, oh, go and enjoy the open air. Go to the sea.
Oh, that's it. Go to the seaside. Kind of, yes.
And this is what they
go
say
to her. Go for a walk
her.
In the park.
Yeah, exactly. Go. Well, even more so, they often will ship people off to the seaside for months on end. Go for a walk in the park. Go, you know, nap off to the sea or whatever it might be. And the doctors kind of go one better with her. They recommend open air, but they also recommend, I love this, they recommend a sea voyage.
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's, you know, everybody's got the money to do that.
I mean, how on earth a sea voyage is going to help your spine? I've no idea. But anyway, they say that. They say, look, you know, she's got this kind of chronic health issues, and they say, go on a sea voyage, and it'll, I mean, could you imagine now that somebody suffering from a spine tumour, and they go travelling, go on a big ship and go abroad. I mean, crazy.
God,
anyway.
You'd really question the doctor, but like, can I just ask, where were you educated? Were exactly? You actually, you know, do you have any qualifications?
Yeah. Right, I know. It's
go
hilarious.
On a voyage.
Go on a voyage. Go on a sea.
Go out
voyage.
On the choppy seas with your bad spine.
I will always take a sea voyage as medication, frankly, but that does sound quite
true,
random.
True, yes.
So her family are behind this, and her father says, right, here we go, here's 100 quid. So gives her £100. This is in, so about a couple of years after her surgery in 1854. And he gives her 100 quid and he says, look, take this, which was quite a lot of money at the time. And he says, go and stay as long as the money lasts. So she goes.
Right.
And she decides, right, well, that's what I'm going to do. And so she runs off to America. And she doesn't just go to America. She goes to the eastern part of Canada as well. And she's there for quite a long time. She is writing to her sister the whole time. Her sister's called Henny, and she writes all these letters, and she kind of essentially journals her trip around America. And when she comes back, she's been there well over a year, she comes back and she collates all these letters together, and it's decided she's going to publish them under as a book title called The English Woman in America. And it's as I understand it, it was an anonymous book. It is since now you can get copies of it, which is, you know, has got her name as the author. So this book is published. And what's quite interesting is she is in America just prior to the American Civil War. So it must have been a really interesting time to be tootling around there and kind of seeing what's going on, which is quite amazing.
Yeah, I would definitely, I'd be interested in that novel, you know, an English Woman in America.
English Woman in America. And you can still get it. And I have to say, having done loads of reading up on her in the last week or two, I have got one of her books order from, I just got it on eBay or something. So I have got one that is coming, and I will be reading it as soon as it arrives, because I'm quite excited about it.
Yeah. So why did she want to go and be anonymous initially?
I mean, I don't know. I've not been able to find out. I've not been able to find out for definite if it was anonymous. I've read in a couple of places it was anonymous, but, you know, I'm taking that on face value. I suspect it might just be as simple as, you know, the sort of the role of Victorian women, that you don't really publish these things.
Sell as many books.
You know, I mean, clearly it's called The English Woman in America, But maybe you just didn't want to put your name to these things. I don't know. Maybe you'd get a reputation for being a sort of somebody who is a bit too carefree. I mean, I don't know. There's probably a million reasons why she didn't. But anyway, like I say, I haven't been able to verify exactly that it was anonymous, but I believe it was anyway.
Okay.
So shortly after she comes back and publishes this book, her father dies in 1858 and the entire family move to Edinburgh. And Edinburgh's quite a key place for her because once they move there, she lives the rest of her life there except for when she's travelling. And she's buried in Edinburgh as well. So Edinburgh essentially becomes her hometown, for want of a better word. And she, like me, was a peripatetic youth, so moving around all the time. So when you finally find your spot, that's it. You're kind of happy there and you stay there. So
what's that word, Alex? Peripatetic?
Peripatetic, yeah. I mean,
peripatetic, honestly. I mean, Samuel Johnson can sod off. We've got Alex Lacey here.
I'll be doing my own diary.
I've never heard
my
that
own
word.
Yeah, peripatetic. It's a good word, isn't it?
It's a very good word.
I've got some favourite words. One of my favourite words is pandiculation.
Pandiculation?
Pandiculation is when you know when you kind of do a massive stretch and you're stretching all the way out.
Yeah.
Especially like when you wake up in the morning, that's pandiculating.
Pandiculating.
That's great, isn't it?
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll go on to my favourite words on another podcast.
Great.
So, yeah.
So Edinburgh.
Yeah, so she moves to Edinburgh and her mum dies not too long after. And she decides that having, you know, whet her appetite for a bit of travel, she is going to go on a variety of other trips. And she goes back to North America three more times, and she goes to the Med as well. So she's doing these kind of slightly shorter trips than the ones she did. But the key trip for her that really changes a lot in her life is when in 1872 she goes to Hawaii. Have you been to Hawaii?
She's very well travelled. No, I haven't. I'd love to go. Have you been to Hawaii?
I went to Hawaii a couple of years ago, and I have to say, it's an incredible place. I am a very, very... I have always loved Polynesian culture, Māori, Samoan, all those kind of cultures. I love Polynesian culture. So for me, Hawaii was fascinating. I absolutely loved it. So I can completely understand her sort of having a kind of breakthrough moment. So she, of course, Hawaii is pretty much halfway around the globe from the UK. It's really a very long way. So nowadays it would take us, well, I can't remember how long it took me before, 20 hours or something to fly there. But of course, when you're going by ship, it's a lot further. So she goes to America, she goes to San Francisco, and then she's not heading for Hawaii, she's heading to New Zealand. She decides to jump ship in Hawaii, and she stays there for a frankly jealousy inducing 6 months.
Ooh.
Which, I know, right?
Gosh, and do you think if the doctor hadn't have said, you know, go on a voyage, she wouldn't have got this travel bug?
I mean, right? It's interesting to wonder whether that's just innate in her and she would have done it anyway. But I mean, definitely it sparked something in her.
Do you think that's why it's called travel bug? Because anybody that had a bug was told to travel.
That's a very good question. I've started doing a little series of where kind of words and phrases come
from. Oh, I've noticed. I saw
on my Instagram and my TikTok as well. I'm on TikTok now. Sorry, everybody. so I might have a little look into travel bug. That's an interesting one. It's probably more likely that it was like a bug that you got when you travelled.
Yeah, exactly. It's probably more likely to be that. But
I think that's a good one. I might look into that. So anyway, she gets to Hawaii, and of course, Hawaii wouldn't have been part of the US back then. So it would have been fully Hawaiian, fully Polynesian culture. I would have been in my element. I would have loved that. And when she's in Hawaii, she does something for the very first time in a new way for the very first time. What do you think would be one of the most sort of liberating things for a woman to do that she would do in a different way? And then I'm making this really complicated, aren't I?
Gosh, like, I don't know. Do a bit of midnight skinny dipping in the sea?
Sounds good, doesn't that? No, she rode a horse astride,
backwards.
So one leg either way, because of course up until then,
oh, it's side saddle. Yes,
if anyone's ever seen the film Titanic, and if you haven't, I mean, you know, everyone's seen that surely. At the end there are all these great pictures of her on her bedside table, and one of them, she talks, I think, in the film about never having ridden a horse with one leg either side. There's a picture of her at the end, and that's quite liberating for women, because side saddle, you're wearing skirts and these big sort of billowing Victorian skirts, but if you're riding one leg astride, you're in trousers, it's much sort of more freeing. And she finds that riding a horse this way completely eradicates the backaches that she's had from riding side saddle.
Oh.
Right.
She didn't need a voyage. She needed to get on a horse properly.
Exactly. Exactly. So wow. In Hawaii, she goes, right, this is brilliant. She starts riding horses everywhere and she goes up. Hawaii's incredible for its tall volcanoes, and she rides up the volcanoes, all these peaks on horseback. And horseback is one of her preferred methods of travel throughout a variety of the places that she's going to go. And she wrote in her memoirs and her, well, not really memoirs, but essentially these travel books that she wrote, that she absolutely loved visiting these remote regions, which of course at the time Hawaii would have been, I mean, it still is remote geographically, but culturally not so much now, but it would have been back then. And so she said, I love visiting these regions which, you know, aren't really known to many people, and seeing all of Hawaiian life and that kind of thing. Here's a good quiz question for you, actually. Do you know what Hawaii was known as, not to the Hawaiians, but to kind of Victorian Westerners at the time?
Oh, no, I don't.
So on the green list of travel locations at the moment, I think anyway, one of the 10 places you can go are the South Sandwich Islands, which are all the way down, uninhabited, down towards Georgia, Falkland Islands, Antarctic way. These were the Sandwich Islands.
South Sandwich
at the bottom and Sandwich Islands further up. So she refers to them as the Sandwich Islands, and she recorded all of this in one of her books, called 6 Months in the Sandwich Islands. So there we go. And so eventually she leaves Hawaii and she goes back to San Francisco, and having kind of found this horse riding thing, she's just let loose, and she goes off onto the Rocky Mountains and up into Colorado all on horseback. And most of these trips that she's doing, she's on her own. Okay, which generally, I mean, we talked about another Victorian traveller on the podcast a few weeks ago, and she travelled with her, what was always termed her friend, essentially her girlfriend.
Oh, yes.
I'm struggling to remember her name now.
Oh, was it? Oh, gosh, what was it?
Amelia Edwards.
Oh, there we go.
There we go. I knew we'd get to it eventually by looking it up. Anyway, Amelia Edwards. So Amelia's off to Egypt and places with her girlfriend, but Isabella is just, she's off on her own. And one of these trips, she's traveling through the Rocky Mountains. She gets caught in a blizzard and she's on her own, and she's apparently, her eyes are frozen shut. And she even gets snowed in to a cabin with two young chaps for a couple of months.
At
one time. I mean, it's incredible. So this is the book that I have ordered. It's called A Lady's Life in the Rocky Mountains. She published it in 1879. And this is what I've got on order. And I can't wait to read this. So when it comes.
Especially because it's 19th century. So it'd just be so interesting to hear how she viewed everything and the conversation she had with these guys. And
so I suspect I'm going to be going down an Isabella Bird rabbit hole book wise in the next few months, because she's got at least 10 books plus loads of other bits and pieces as well. So there we go. So from fairly Western cultures, obviously Hawaii being Polynesian, but essentially, you know, linked, well, obviously not linked to America at the time, that's my modern sensibility, she goes east. She goes to Japan. She hires a young chap to be her translator, and they travel all the way up to Hokkaido, which is up in the northern part, which is pretty much as far north as you can get. And it's quite remote, especially back then. And she stays with a tribe up there, who are a tribe called the Ainu, who are, as I understand it, the original inhabitants of the island. So they're not actually Japanese. They are, First Nations peoples, really.
And how old is she around this time, Alex?
So what are we talking? We're talking about 1880. So she would have been 50s?
Oh, 50s.
Yeah, 50s. What was
it? 18, yeah.
So she's born in 1832.
Okay.
Somewhere in the late 40s, early 50s at this point in time. So, you know, especially women in the Victorian. We've always got to kind of put this in the right time. For now, like 50s, fine, no problem. But back then, you're like, wow. She is also publishing, she publishes a book on Japan called Unbeaten Tracks in Japan. Mm-hmm. And then she goes to Hong Kong and Saigon and Singapore and all these kind of places. And she also spends 5 weeks traveling around the Malayan Peninsula as well.
And I guess she's the money enabling her to do all this, is it coming from her books?
Well, interesting. So there would be some coming from that, but essentially they were... They're a fairly well-off family anyway.
Oh, right. So
she's sort of upper middle class, really. So that she's inherited money from her parents by this point. So
she's not still spending, you know, money from the original 100.
No. She got through the 100, but yeah, you know, she's using kind of family funds and that kind of thing. Now, when she comes back to England, because she spent a lot of time traveling. And when she finally comes back, she realizes she's basically famous from her books about Hawaii and the Rocky Mountains. Wow. Now, shortly after she comes back, her sister gets sick from typhoid. And her sister, who she was very close to, also in her 50s, her sister Henny dies. Mm. And she gets very friendly with a chap called Dr. John Bishop, who is the doctor who's taking care of her sister. And they become so friendly that they actually get married.
Well, that is pretty friendly, isn't it?
It is pretty friendly. And this is where, so in her entire life, she basically spends most of her life traveling from the age of sort of 20, 22, all the way up to 70. She spends it traveling, wow, with the exception of about 7 years. And this is the 7 years where she's back before her sister dies and then her marriage to John Bishop. But about 5 years into the marriage, he dies as well.
Oh, no.
So she's kind of lost, you know, all of her family and her husband and everything. But, what, you know, you imagine what would she do then? She'd sort of retire to her house in the countryside and sort of live out her, you know, her days. And that, absolutely not. Nope. Isabella Bird is carrying
not
on.
Not so Isabella Bird.
In 1888, so we're talking she's about 55, 56 by this point, she goes off for India. And when she gets to India, she establishes a hotel, in fact, two hotels, what we're talking about, two hospitals, one in her sister's name, Henrietta Bird, and one in her husband's name, John Bishop. So there's a memorial hospital in two different places. And she keeps going. Now, I should have mentioned as well, as well as writing stuff, she's also taking photos of people as well. There is a huge cache of photos that she took. And we're talking about, because she's interested in the flora and fauna as well, which comes from her father's interest and everything he's taught her. But we're also talking about the people that she meets. We're talking about the people that travel with her, so translators and things like this. And if you go to there's a museum in Scotland, which is the National Library of Scotland. You go there, they have the whole cache of, if not all of them, but most of them, of her photos. You can see a lot of them online, and they're kind of incredible because she's getting these very candid shots of people that most Westerners would never have seen before. In fact, very few people outside of their own kind of local communities would have seen them. So, you know,
wow. This and is back then, you know, quite the groundbreaking. The fact that you could take pictures isn't something that had been around for that long.
No, exactly. So, I've sort of interrupted her flow around India, haven't I? Really,
there. Anyway, she's in India.
She goes through Kashmir and all sorts of places. She goes onto the border with Tibet, and I mean, this is somebody who, again, she's still travelling on her own, and she's coming up against quite a lot of slightly scary situations. There's one occasion where her horse trips over. When she's crossing a river, and the horse trips over, and the horse falls into the river and drowns underneath her, and she breaks two of her ribs.
Oh, bloody hell.
I know, right?
That's dramatic.
Very, very dramatic. She also meets up with a chap called Herbert Sawyer, who was a major in the army, who was an old friend of hers. They meet up in northern India, and he was on his way to Persia, and they travel through the desert in the middle of the winter, and they arrive basically kind of half dead on the other end. She leaves him there, and then she carries on for another 6 months. She heads up her own kind of caravan going through Iran and Turkey and places like this as well. So, of course, one of the things that she's seeing is that she's traveling through a lot of countries, and she's seeing a lot of stuff happening. When she comes back to England, one of the things that she does is she meets up with the Prime Minister at the time, who's William Gladstone, and she addresses a parliamentary committee because she's seen there's all sorts of atrocities happening against the Armenians in the Middle East, and she does not like this at all. So she takes that kind of mantle of this issue, and she goes to the Prime Minister and she's like, hey dude, you know, come on, this is happening and we really need to get a grip on this. So she is becoming incredibly well known to the point where the Prime Minister is taking notice of her as well.
And well, you know, she's seen it firsthand, hasn't she?
Yes, yeah,
she
absolutely
can describe everything and what's going on.
Absolutely. And so this is the point at which she's made a fellow of the Royal Scottish Geographical Society. And they've already had women in theirs, but England is now catching up, and she becomes the first female fellow of the Royal Geographical Society in England as well.
Wow.
But she still wants to carry on, so she sets out again in the 1890s. She's in her, what'd she be, 70s by now? Yeah, she's in her sort of early to mid-70s. She goes to... No, sorry, I lie. I'm terrible at maths. Born in 32... 60s, early to mid 60s. There we go. So she goes off back to Japan and into Korea as well. This is the time when there's a Sino-Japanese war that's breaking out, and which is leads to the occupation of Korea by Japan. And she's going and she's sort of photographing the soldiers that are heading in, and she goes and actually looks at what's happened in the war. She sees the devastation, and it's quite a big deal. So she's almost like a kind of war, like documenting war as well. And she's doing this all on her own too. And then from Korea, she goes into the Yangtze River in China, and she goes as far up the river as she possibly can into Sichuan province. And there she gets attacked. She's attacked by a mob who say that she's a foreign devil of some description. And what they do is they take a hostage and they trap her. They get her in the top floor of this house and they basically lock her in there.
Then
they set it on fire. Yeah.
Bloody hell.
I know. So she is, I mean, in really sticky situation. At the last minute, there's a group of soldiers who come to her rescue and they save her.
Oh, thank God.
I know. She's even in another location. She's stoned and knocked unconscious. Oh. And I don't mean stoned, you know, the wacky-backy. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, being whacked over the head with great big rocks.
Jesus.
And yeah, so, you know, she gets into a few scrapes along the way. And it's kind of, we sort of imagine these Victorian ladies riding a horse genteelly through lovely rolling hills. But, you know, she's in there. She's on the front line of it as well.
Well, she must
really
have thought, you know, being by herself that, you know, at some point my luck's bound to change.
Well,
like going...
yeah. You know, I think even if you speak to sort of adventurers today, they know that they're going places that are off the beaten track. And if you get into trouble, then you've kind of only really got yourself to look out for. So... Mm. It's quite amazing. And she's such a sort of well-known figure now that Queen Victoria, if Queen Victoria wants information on somewhere, she'll send for Isabella Bird. She'll send, you know, to have correspondence with her and kind of find out stuff. Because, of course, Victoria is the Empress of India and she's got the whole empire and all that kind of thing. So if she wants to know what's going on in a country or what it's like, who she's going to ask? Well, Isabella's a great person.
Wow.
You know, perfect person to go to. And then when Victoria dies, her son, Edward VII, they don't have quite as close a relationship, but he's still a sort of passing acquaintance to Isabella as well. So quite interesting. What age do you think retirement from worldwide travel in the Victorian age would seem like an option for Isabella?
Well, I think that she's going to the bitter end, to be honest. I've got a feeling that perhaps she dies while she's away and her body is brought back to Edinburgh.
Do you know what? Interesting. Not quite. She does go pretty much almost to the bitter end. She does die in Edinburgh at the age of 72 in 1904.
So strong age for the Victorians.
Very strong age. And like I say, she's been travelling all the way through. She travels one of her last journeys is... At the age of 70, she goes to Morocco.
Again by herself.
And she decides that she's going to ride on horseback again. What would you consider a long journey on horseback?
Oh, God, about 10 minutes. I'm not a horsey person.
No. She goes for 1,000 miles.
1,000 miles?
1,000 miles.
Plus, she's had... Obviously, she had a problem with her spine,
yeah.
And she broke two ribs when she had that incident with the horse drowning underneath her.
Yeah.
She's 70.
She's 70.
Bloody
she's
hell.
On her own. And she's going through the Atlas Mountains in Morocco and, you know, really quite an impressive feat.
Mm.
And to the point where that little journey, that tiny little journey of 1,000 miles was mentioned in her obituary as well when she died.
Oh,
yeah.
Excellent.
It's incredible. And so there's a couple of great little phrases in her obituary. There's a few obituaries of her. And I've picked out a couple of quotes. One said that she usually chose the scenes of her travels to regions that were coming into public notice, and thus her accurate and careful descriptions had a timely and practical interest. So clearly, you know, what she is discovering, the places she's going, is really helping sort of the public or the sort of upper echelons understand these places a bit better.
Mm.
And another one said, it's a great quote, she was one of the pluckiest travellers of either sex that this country has ever known, and her books were particularly rich in fresh, direct observation.
Oh, I like that. Do you think they chose the word pluckiest because her last name's Bird?
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that.
She's so plucky. I'm so impressed with this woman. I'm going to have
to
get on the Bird book wagon with you
I should have ordered you a copy, actually. It's I'm really looking forward to reading it.
Mm.
It's been quite a while since I've read about somebody in a book that they wrote and thought, I want to read that. want to read that.
Especially just, I mean, I quite enjoy reading travel journals anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
But to read one, you know, that was written in the 19th century. Yeah. From
Bill
the
Bryson,
eyes
eat
of,
your heart out, eh?
Yeah, from a lady travelling by herself.
Now, there's a slightly lengthier quote that I want to read. And this is not anything to do with her actual travels, but I love this. This was written in a publication about her life a couple of years after she died. There was this sort of big, kind of essentially a biography written of her. And there was this one event from her childhood, which it doesn't actually have anything to do with travel, but I think it really shows the kind of stuff that influenced her curious mind. Because you've got to have a curious mind
Definitely.
To be going off and doing all this kind of amazing travelling.
Definitely.
So it's a slightly longer one, but I want to read this out. So it talks about the area that she grew up in, an area called Tattenhall. And it says there's a hill known as Rawhead. This hill was full of caves in which dwelt a gang of outcasts whose doings grew notorious. Robbery followed robbery in the neighbourhood. The caves were searched on suspicion, but nothing was found to warrant arrest. The burglaries continued and the matter grew serious. At length, one midnight, someone passing the churchyard saw lights and heard voices and forthwith proclaimed that it was haunted. No one would go near it until the magistrates decided to make a midnight raid with armed constables and to see what manner of ghosts disturbed its peace. They found the Rawhead gang busy hiding booty in a grave, the slab of which had been raised. An old woman whose cottage was close to the churchyard proved to be in collusion with the burglars and had assisted them to choose their storehouse. All were arrested and transported. But Isabella never forgot how her nurse took her to see the unearthing of silver plate and jewellery from that grim hiding place, and how, trembling rather with eagerness than fear, she and a little playfellow watched the whole process hand in hand from the lifting of the slab to the recovery of the last teaspoon.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Isn't that cool?
Wow, that conjures up so many beautiful images.
Just her nurse is like, right, this is cool. We've got to go and see this. I love this idea of this girl kind of standing there going, oh my God, this is so cool. And I just love that idea of her sort of something being sparked in her and going, oh, there's adventure to be had. And
Yeah. Oh, that's fabulous.
So links in London to Isabella Bird. The National Portrait Gallery has two portraits of her.
Okay.
And then, of course, we have the National, the Royal Geographic Society as well. But to be honest, mostly the links are in Edinburgh, which is where it was kind of her home base when she wasn't travelling and where she ended her days. And that is where she is buried to this day. So just to give you a bit of an idea of some of the books that she's written. So we've talked about the English Woman in America and things like that. She's got Journeys in Persia and Kurdistan. She's got the Yangtze Valley and Beyond, Notes on Morocco, which was published in a review paper as well. She's got ones on Australia, on the Malay Peninsula, Korea and her neighbours is one as well. It's absolutely amazing the amount of stuff that she wrote about.
And she must have been so good with people, you know, to meet so many people from all walks of life and get to know different cultures and how people react to things and different languages.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if you think as well, this is a woman who's come from a well-to-do middle-class family. Not the, you know, normally those sort of people you wouldn't imagine would be perfectly comfortable slumming it on, you know, a dusty roadside somewhere if you can't find somewhere to sleep, bedding down next to your horse. And yet this is a woman who's just gone, right, I'm going to go there. I don't know anything about it. Let's just go and let's see what happens. And, you know,
Isn't
it phenomenal?
Wow. Well, I'm super duper impressed with Isabella Bird.
Right. So there we go. That's Isabella Bird. Yeah.
Cool. Thank you very much,
so you can
Alex.
See why I've kind of got a little bit of a girl crush on her.
Yeah, I
She's
can.
She's amazing. And I can't wait for that book to arrive and read that. Yeah,
you have to update us on the next podcast.
I will. I'll see if I can find a copy for you as well. Well, I can lend you mine after I'm done because I think it's going to be a good read.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Podcast Pedestal.
So there we go.
So, gosh, podcast pedestal. There's quite a few things.
There's quite a bit in there.
There's quite a few crux points in her life, isn't there?
There are. I mean, I know what I want to go for, but I also don't. I think I went first last time, I think, possibly. So I don't want to charge on in there. I want to give you the first dibs.
Are you going to let me go first?
Yeah,
okay, go on. Well, well, it's a toss up for me. It's either the doctor saying that you've, you know, go on a voyage.
Yeah. Go on a voyage, off you go.
Go on a voyage. Or it's the £100 given to her by her father.
Oh, that's cool, because my choice is not either of those, so that's all right.
Oh, fantastic. Okay. Yeah. Well, I think I'm going to go for the £100 given by her father.
Okay. Cool.
Or am I going to go for the doctor?
I don't know.
What are you going to go for? I make my decision afterwards.
I'm going to go for the horse riding in Hawaii. The moment at which she kind of learned to be able to...
She decided to put her leg on the other side.
That liberty, that sudden liberty of being able to go, oh, wait, I can ride a horse here. I have much more control. I can wear trousers. And now I can, you know, I'm off. And it's solved
my back
problems.
Yeah.
And I can now go off and ride horses through blizzards in Colorado and Tibetan landscapes and you know, all that kind of thing. So for me, it's the sort of two-legged horse riding. That's not a thing, is it? But the horse, yeah, the sort of riding astride that she learned in Hawaii.
That's a really good one. Bugger.
Oh, you'll win anyway. Come on.
No, I won't. No.
You're on a roll.
No, I'm not. Didn't you win the last one?
Well, I won last week's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did, didn't you?
Yeah. That was last week.
Yeah, Hammer won. Yeah, Hammer won. So, oh, gosh, pressure. I think it's going to be... Oh, because I kind of want to say the £100 given to her by her father.
Okay.
To go off.
Yep.
But at the same time, she would have been given money here and there. But that seemed like that was quite an incentive.
I like the idea of him just going, stay as long as the money lasts. I quite like that.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm going to go for the money given to her by her father.
Cool. The £100 travel money.
Yes.
Amazing.
Wow. Thank you very much, Alex Lacey. Yay. That was great.
So there we go. That's Isabella Bird. So, what have we got coming up? I guess you haven't got too much coming up at the minute, have you?
No, just trying to get into the swing of motherhood.
Just being puked on and that kind of thing.
Yes, I have to apologise as well, because if you heard a few kind of gurgles, Carmen was with us.
She was.
For a little while.
She's a big fan of the podcast.
She is. She doesn't want to miss out.
She's already rated and reviewed several times. So, you know, if you haven't, what have you been doing?
Yeah. The sad thing is that she doesn't even go for my podcast option, but whatever.
I've trained her to vote for me.
Oh, damn it. Yeah, so for me, not much. I'm still posting my Let's Talk About Art on Fridays.
Oh, yeah.
So little videos just about an artist or a piece of art. So, you know, feel free to follow me there. But no, what are you doing, Alex? What are you up to?
I have just released new dates for my walking tours. Yay! Which go all the way through to, I think, the end of August, start of September.
Oh, brilliant.
So tons and tons of dates up there for all of your faves, all of your harlots and your Bermondsey and street art and, well, Women of Westminster and all that kind of stuff.
Great.
Yeah, all on the website.
Good.
And there we go. Go and get them.
Go get them.
The Wheel of Destiny.
We've got to spin the wheel.
We have.
We've got to spin the wheel. Right, so it's my turn, isn't it? My turn next week.
Yes.
What
are you thinking? Person or place or thing? Or what are you in the mood for?
I do have a little list. There are a few names on my list, a few people, a few ladies that I'd like to talk about.
All right.
So I'm going to see where it lands and make a decision. Okay.
All right. Let's go for it then.
We're off. And oh my God, it's landed in Kensington again.
It hasn't. Have you waited that or something?
I haven't. No.
No, but I have to say,
you were just jealous about the myriad options that you can have in Kensington. You're like, I need one of those.
Sounds good. The wheel is looking a little bit sad as well. I think I'm going to have to make a new one.
Oh no.
Yeah, it's looking a little bit.
We'll just retool it, maybe.
Yeah.
Restick some new areas on it or something.
Yeah, exactly.
We did take one or two away when we'd done a couple, didn't we? Maybe we
true.
Take Kensington off for a little
Neil
bit.
Buchanan moment back out. Yeah. Okay, so Kensington.
What, Banksy?
So,
So
obviously there's lots of institutions. You've got the French Quarter just over the road.
Are we going French?
I'm not. Going to do that. But, there's quite a few potholes from World War II, isn't there?
We're going to do potholes, are we? Tune in this week where we're talking about World War II potholes. Enjoy!
I'm sure there's a
That's
couple
a bit
of people
too nerdy
there,
even so. For us, Em.
That is a bit, isn't it? I feel like, God.
Try choosing a podcast pedestal from a pothole.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
You know who is on my list?
Go on, then.
Beatrix Potter.
Damn you, she's on my list too.
Is she?
Yes. Well, what you don't know is that my favouritest book, that's a word, growing up was Peter Rabbit.
Do you know what? It does not shock me. Did you go like a bit kind of crazy when the Beatrix Potter 50 pence piece coins came out?
No.
Oh, okay. Just thought you might have. Because
you can get Peter Rabbit. Oh, now I'm going to have to find one. I was a big fan of Peter Rabbit when I was a kid. And I had a toy that was my nighttime toy, which was Peter Rabbit.
Nice.
Yeah.
I had quite a few little things. I had a jigsaw puzzle and with Peter Rabbit. And I remember... when it came to the carrot, there was a big piece missing, so I never got to finish it. It was always this orange piece. I was like, where is it?
Poor Peter Rabbit will go hungry.
So I'm going to do Beatrix Potter.
Brilliant.
I'm going to do Beatrix Potter, who was born in Kensington, so that works perfectly.
That's great. Yeah,
great.
Brilliant.
We'll take a trip down
memory
lane.
I don't know that much about her particularly. I just know the stories because they were some of my faves, but I don't know.
She's had quite an interesting life. So... yes.
Fabulous.
Beatrix Potter next week.
And then maybe we'll go do some events or something after that.
Yes. Yeah.
Cool. I'm down with it. Yay. Thanks. Looking forward to that.
Lovely.
Well, that's it for this week. Thank you, everybody, for coming along.
Thank you, everybody.
I know we always ask. So do other podcasts. We're just following on from the people who look like they know what they're doing. We're just bimbling along behind. Please do the whole rating, subscribing, liking. Please go and tell us if you think that we are, you know, we hate each other on the review section again. That's always very entertaining.
Yeah, please.
Yeah.
Give us the psychology behind our
Absolutely.
Relationship.
Be hilarious. And we will see you next week for a bit of badass Beatrix Potter, which is how she liked to be referred to.
I'm sure she did, Alex.
Yay.
Perfect.
All right. See you next week, everyone.
Thank you very much, podcasts. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.